Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshua Unminitam Nina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pungum Longayate Garim Yat Kripata Maham Vande Shri Gurundina Tananam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vidanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shanyavari Pastachyade Sitarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. If anyone's cold, you can say something. I needed a little air load to before beginning. apologize for keeping devotees in suspense about what I'm going to be speaking about. But I was keeping myself in suspense too until this morning. It's a topic I've discussed many times, so I thought it would be advantageous for myself to discuss something that I've already spoken about before, although it's been a long time since I have spoken about it. Whenever I have spoken about it, devotees have always come forward and expressed appreciation that they found it was something that was very relevant. I thought that's certainly an important criteria for what I would present. It should be something that's relevant. And I took a little cue from Sachinanda Maharaj yesterday. I suspect that he might have said it for a reason. Maybe I misread it, but he said in his presentation at the beginning when he was speaking about Srimad Bhagavatam, maybe it was yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, anyways. He said that there's two options that devotees can have argue amongst themselves or they can sit down and discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. I didn't know if it was just a random statement. It had nothing to do with anything that goes on in Switzerland. It's possible. But I found that it's generally relevant in a lot of other places, if Switzerland may be an exception. And if it's not relevant, I apologize. Now that I've sprung on the topic I'm going to speak about, if it's not something you expected, the topic is from Sri Bhaktiloka about controlling the urge to speak. And if you find that it's something that it's not that you are anticipating to hear about, you're free to not have to hear it because I just told you now what I'm going to speak about. But I found that Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur, in his illuminations on bhakti from these 12 essays he had written from Rupa Goswami's verses from Upadeshamrita, explaining the six principles favorable for devotional service, six activities, I should say, which are unfavorable for devotional service. He has elaborated them in a very relevant way. It's something that we can actually take and put into a modern context very easily, which I have tried to do previously, taken his instructions and put it into a modern context, in the sense that Bhaktivinoda Thakur also in his Godruma Kalpatavi and in many of his writings, he was dealing with householders living in villages and common place for taking common activities and take place in villages is that there would be village talk. And I believe that in some of these essays, he's specifically addressing that point. And when you hear these things, it's very illuminating. And interesting to understand that actually the Sri Bhakti Lokas actually described the illuminations on Bhakti. And it's very illuminating how that he was establishing certain guidelines based upon devotional principles. And he could understand that, again, that these guidelines are something that everybody should follow, everybody should aspire to follow, and most people may not immediately be able to follow, but nonetheless they should know what they are. And in fact, it's one of the anarthas is to not know what the pitfalls of bhakti is. What pitfalls of bhaktis are. It's an anartha. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has illuminated in a very clear way many different principles about social behavior, social interaction between devotees, both householders and renunciants. And Sri Bhakti Loka is our illuminations on bhakti, which are, and he's many times throughout the work, he says, O sadhakas. It's obvious that he's addressing sadhakas. In other words, he knows he's not speaking to the general class of non-devotees, but he's speaking to those who actually have adapted their life in such a way which includes sadhana. And by adapting one's life in such a way which includes sadhana, it means that whenever he uses the word, or the word that's been described here as work, he's not speaking about work in the sense of 9-to-5 job, he's speaking about the sadhaka's work. A sadhaka has to work on himself also. And this will come up right in the very beginning when I begin reading about this point where he talks about the sadhaka's work. It's just the kind of work that one has to do while executing sadhana. One of the processes of clearing anarthas from the heart is first is to be conscious of what those anarthas are, and by chanting Hare Krishna, and by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, by associating with more advanced devotees, sometimes these anarthas begin to manifest and come to the surface, and we can do either deal with them in a realistic way, or we can ignore them and think that they'll go away by themselves. And a realistic way is when a devotee actually begins to sincerely pray, knowing that I can't get rid of anarthas by myself. I'm fully dependent on Krishna, I'm dependent on the holy name, I'm dependent on Vaishnavas. And there's no anartha cancelling switch, you know, that we can just turn off and then expect that all of a sudden they'll be gone. It'd be nice if, you know, if we could find the switch, but generally the recommended process for clearing anarthas is to understand that the strength to overcome them has to come from a source outside myself, because I can't do it alone. If we try to do the anartha cleaning process by our own activities, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur even brings this point out in Bhakti Loka. He distinguishes between the jnanis who think I can do it on my own strength, and because the jnanis think they can do it on their own strength, they're thinking by dint of my intellectual capacity, by dint of my knowledge, by dint of my strength of my mind, I will overcome the obstacles of material life. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur very, very clearly says that one of the characteristics of the jnanis is they're not dependent on Krishna's mercy, because they think, I can do it by my own intellectual ability. I can find the switch myself. And by the strength of my knowledge and intellect, I will be able to cancel out all the obstacles which are preventing me from achieving my goal, which is liberation, in most cases. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also says that sometimes they may temporarily take, this is not in Bhakti Loka, but it's in Tattva Viveka. He says that sometimes they may temporarily take help from a guru and to help them to achieve their goal, but their understanding is that the real objective is to achieve my goal. Once I have achieved it, I don't need mercy anymore. I've got it. And therefore they reject guru, and they're never, the inclination, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Bhakti Loka, the inclination for eternal service to Krishna doesn't manifest in their heart. And without that, they may achieve their various objectives, their goals, but as long as they think they can do it on their own strength, then they're not dependent on Krishna's mercy. In fact, when I think of that example that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives of how a disciple may accept mercy from guru to achieve his objectives, and then at some point he feels he doesn't need them anymore, I think of that example that in Mayapur, Prabhupada. Right, you know the story. Prabhupada, once he was crossing, Mayapur used to be just all ditches, agricultural fields. Huh? Was it the stairs? Oh, I heard it was the ditch. It was the stairs. You were there? Uh-huh. Oh, maybe you should tell the story. You didn't see. You didn't have the bird's eye view. Tell the story, anyways.
Prabhupada was walking down the stairs in the original building. What's that called?
The original. The Lotus Building.
Lotus Building. The two stairways that go down like that. He was walking down the stairs and he put his hand on, I think,
Bhavananda. It was Bhavananda.
And they walked and they got down to the bottom and he pushed Bhavananda away. So that's the Mayavada. He takes help from the guru.
He pushes him away. Yeah, he was shocked, you know, like, what Prabhupada? He took help, you know, and then all of a sudden, and then Prabhupada explained, yes, this is the Mayavadis, this is what they do. They take help and then think, I don't need it anymore, I've got my achieved my goals. But actually, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur states in Bhakti Loka, that the eternal inclination for service to Krishna will not manifest in their hearts, unless, of course, they get the mercy of a devotee. And sometimes, by the mercy of the devotee, even those who are inclined towards impersonal liberation and Mayavad philosophy can, well, there's so many examples. Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is an example, the Prakashananda Saraswati, and the Mayavadi sannyasis. Certainly the examples are there that even they can become devotees by mercy. But mercy is required. And therefore, as we said, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his presentations and illuminations of Bhakti and Sri Bhakti Aloka, he speaking, addressing directly to sadhakas, are those who are understand that in the execution of one's sadhana, one should always be seeking help, mercy, dependent, calling out for help. I can't do this alone. I can't overcome these obstacles alone. But I know what they are. And because I know what they are, I realize that I'm not as highly qualified as I would like to think I am. And because at least I have the benefit or the advantage of seeing I have an artist. I mean, that's in itself, that's a blessing of having the advantage of seeing that I have an artist. And of course, this, we can deal with them in different ways. We can try to avoid looking at the anarthas within ourselves by looking at them in others. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur addresses that also here in discussing the urge to speak. He says that he describes the tendency to speak about others. He specifically states it's a wonderful alternative to having to look within our own self, is when we spend our time just finding the defects and faults in others. And it really kind of elevates our own position, because then we begin to think, everyone around me has all these faults and I don't see any of myself, so I must be better than everyone else. And it's kind of it's a very artificial way of advancing. And that's the symptom of envy. The symptom of envy is the way people advance, is by pushing others down. And it's an anartha. It's jiva hingsa, envy of other living beings. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about that also here. And a lot of it is in the discussion about controlling the urge to speak. And specifically, we'll get to that point about controlling the urge to speak, but I thought I should try to introduce the topic in this way by saying that the topics being discussed here are meant for sadhakas, those who know that they're dependent on mercy, and those who are, and what we're going to speak about today is a daya, or patient, because without patience, it's very, very difficult, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur will also illuminate, elaborate on in this topic of patience. Without patience, he says that many sadhakas will fall from their sadhana because they don't have patience. And he defines patience in a very interesting way. He says, he concludes his topic on patience. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but it's just a little, it's relevant. He concludes his topic by patience, on patience, by stating that patience means, for a devotee, he says, the karmis, they want some fruit. They want to enjoy some enjoyment. That is the goal of their activities. The jnanis, they want some fruit. They work, perform their activities because they want the fruit of liberation. And the bhaktas want some fruit. It might be interesting. We think bhaktas don't want any fruit. But he says the bhaktas want the fruit. The bhaktas want is they want Krishna's pleasure. That is the fruit. And in endeavoring to achieve Krishna's pleasure, which is sometimes not so easy to obtain, he says, a devotee must become patient because it may not be so immediately accessible that Krishna's pleased. In fact, there is a verse I oftentimes quote in this connection, spoken by Prahlad Maharaj. He's speaking to his friends, classmates, oh my friends, oh sons of demons. He's pretty straightforward. He said, you can't please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if you become expert Brahmins, even if you become advanced in etiquette, nor by vast learning, nor by austerities, nor by chastity, nor by great sacrifices, nor by accepting vows, none of these activities can awaken the Lord's pleasure. He says, the Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything else is simply a show. That's Prahlad, 5-year-old boy, very conversant on these topics. He, in essence, what he was saying, that it's bhakti that attracts Krishna's attention. And if there's no bhakti, then you can wave your hand, you can do all the kinds of austerities you want, you can jump up and down, make all kinds of demands you want, you could perform great sacrifices. But he says, it's a show because Krishna's not going to look, so therefore it must be for somebody else's entertainment. Bhagavad bhakti hinasya jati shastram japastapa. Prabhupada used to oftentimes quote that verse. Bhagavad bhakti hinasya, that for a person who's devoid of devotional service, even if he becomes advanced in vast learning, even if he can chant all kinds of Vedic mantras, even if he takes birth in a great family or nation, even if he's expert in performing all kinds of austerities, all these things are considered to be like ornaments on a dead body. They simply serve the concocted pleasures of the general populace. Now, what is the value of ornaments on a dead body? Not very valuable. So he says, birth, expert chanting Vedic mantras, austerities, but there's no bhakti. There's no question of getting Krishna's attention. So the point is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that a bhakta wants Krishna's pleasure, but it's not so easy to obtain. It doesn't come so quickly. It's not something that's, you know, that we can expect immediately. And therefore, he says one of the criteria for being able to advance, and he's illuminating on this topic of patience, is patience. And he defines patience. He says patience means, for a bhakta, patience means that someday I will get Krishna's mercy. Someday. Whether it's soon, now, soon, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, 100 lives from now. I have faith that someday I'll get Krishna's mercy and I'll never give up serving Him. He said this type of patience is required for bhakti. Now, whew, that's not, it's not so easy. Imagine having to go through years, decades, and you know, lives, and being so determined that and so patient that I will get Krishna's mercy, that one will is ready to persevere and go on because of firm faith that someday I'll get it. Another verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam I oftentimes quote, which is very relevant in this connection. I love this verse. Pure devotional service, Hari Purusha knows it, he's heard me quote it many times. Pure devotional service is so transcendentally potent that simply by hearing about it, simply by glorifying it in response, simply by meditating on it, simply by faithfully and respectfully accepting that it exists. It may not be here, but it exists. And I have faith that it does. Simply by faithfully and respectfully accepting that it exists, and simply by praising the service of others, even a person who hates all the demigods and all living entities. Imagine how envious one has to be to hate all living entities. Can immediately be purified. I mean, that when you hear that verse, doesn't it give you hope? That if I just go on hearing about it, even though it may not be here yet, but I have enough faith to go on hearing that it exists, I have hope. It's just a wonderful, I mean, a faith builder. It's just a wonderful encouragement that even a person who hates all living entities can become purified if he just has enough faith to hear about it and to repeat it in response. I may have not fully realized it, but it was nice. I liked it. I think I'll repeat it. I'll tell others about it. I'll meditate on it. Yeah, pure devotional service. It's good. It's good. And faithfully respected and respectfully accepting that it's manifest, that I'm very eager to see wherever it's manifest. Just as in the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, he's stated that pure devotional service cannot be had by millions of births of pious activities. It can only be achieved by those who have the intense greed to obtain it. And then wherever one sees it, he should immediately purchase it without delay. So it's something that we should have faith exists. And we can become purified. So although Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this kind of patience is required for bhakti, we can also understand that there are examples of devotees who achieved mercy very quickly because they had that much faith. And perfect examples, Mukunda. When Mukunda was, you know, Lord Chaitanya during his Mahaprakash Leela, he was giving benedictions to all the devotees, and one by one he was calling them before him, and he was telling them about their previous lives and telling them how he intervened in their lives in various ways, and all the devotees were coming before him and asking for blessings, and Mukunda was standing nearby, and he was waiting and for Lord Chaitanya to call him, but he wasn't calling him. And he said, Srivastakur, he said, can you please ask Lord Chaitanya, you know, when is he going to call me and give me a chance to... And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, that Mukunda, I never want to see his face. That Mukunda, he comes here in the association of Vaishnavas and he behaves like a Vaishnava. But I know before he's been associating with the impersonalists. And he goes there and he behaves like them. He says, just like a person. Like, on one hand, he comes with a lotus flower to offer some prayers and benediction. And the other hand, it's like holding a mace. He hits me over the head. Because previously, Mukunda had associated with. So Lord Chaitanya, with impersonalists. So Lord Chaitanya said, no, forget it. And when Mukunda heard this, he was standing to the side because he couldn't stand in front of Lord Chaitanya. And he asked Srivas, can you ask him when will I see him? When will I be able to see him? And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, after 10 million births, he will see. Now, that could be pretty discouraging. But what did Mukunda do? He began dancing in ecstasy. Arms in the air, running around. I will see. The Lord says, I will see again. 10 million births were just didn't even enter. It wasn't relevant to him. He had complete faith in his words that I will see. And then Lord Chaitanya said to Srivas, get Mukunda. But Mukunda was still dancing in ecstasy. They had to pick him up and carry him. 10 million births reduced to a few moments. Because he had firm faith in the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Had firm faith in bhakti. Had firm faith in the Lord. And because of his firm faith in the Lord, he can reduce 10 million births to a few moments, minutes, maybe a little bit longer. But patience still is required if it doesn't manifest fast enough. So he says, if it does seems to be not manifesting fast enough, then just be patient that, yes, someday Krishna's mercy will be there. And however long it takes, be confident that I will obtain it. So he speaks about patience in Sri Bhakti Loka. And I wanted to begin because we said that this topic is about controlling the urge to speak. So I guess it's connected to patience. Because it may not be so possible to immediately, you know, by our own strength, you know, to control the urge to speak. But at least we should know what is the proper behavior of a Vaishnava. What is that verse? Dharma stapana hetu sadhura vyavahara puri gosa nira ye chana se damasar. Spoken by Lord Chaitanya. He says, Dharma stapana hetu sadhura vyavahara, that the behavior of a devotee is the true purpose of religious principles. Madhavendra Puri's behavior is the essence of all such religious principles. And Lord Chaitanya made this statement about Madhavendra Puri. It was in connection to... He was coming to Mathura. That's right. He was coming to Mathura. And then when he was entering into Mathura, he was dancing in great ecstasy, and one Brahmin came up. And he began dancing in ecstasy with Lord Chaitanya. And then when Lord Chaitanya looked at him dancing in ecstasy, Lord Chaitanya could understand that this person is, by his observation, this person is a very elevated devotee. He's ecstatic. And after some time of them dancing together, they went to the side and Lord Chaitanya asked him, he said, where have you gotten such ecstatic love of Godhead? And the Brahmin told Lord Chaitanya, he said, actually, one time in the past, Madhavendra Puri had come to Mathura, and I welcomed him to my home. He came to my home, and I prepared food for him, and he accepted food, and he accepted me as his disciple. And Lord Chaitanya said, I knew you must have had Madhavendra Puri's association. Soon as I saw that, he could immediately understand. And then this Brahmin was a Sanodiya Brahmin, and he invited Lord Chaitanya to his home to eat, and because he was Sanodiya Brahmin, he was not allowed to actually cook for sannyasis. That was the rule. So therefore, the Brahmin said to Lord Chaitanya's servant, Balabhadra Bhattacharya, he said, you should cook, because I can't cook. Please cook, prepare for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then there was some discussion, and Lord Chaitanya said, no, you don't understand. Madhavendra Puri has already set the precedent. he's taken food in your home. And then the Brahmin, when Lord Chaitanya heard that the Brahmin was initiated by Madhavendra Puri, then he immediately offered obeisances to the Brahmin, and the Brahmin could understand, why are you offering obeisances to me? You're a sannyasi, I'm a householder. And Lord Chaitanya said, because you are the godbrother of my spiritual master. And Lord Chaitanya was giving him all respect. But then what happened was that Balabhadra Bhattacharya was asked to cook, but Lord Chaitanya said, no, I want you to cook for me, because Madhavendra Puri already set the standard by his perfect behavior. And whatever standards he sets, I follow. And he said, the behavior of the devotee establishes the two true purposes of religious principles. Dharma stapana hita sadhura vyavahara. Puri go sanira achara se dhammasara. And then I think Kaviraj Goswami also then quotes the verse Tako Pratishta Shutayo Vibina, that dry arguments are inconclusive. One philosopher may present his argument, another philosopher may present his argument, and they'll never come to understanding. But if you want to know the solid truth of religious principles, the only place you can find it is in the heart of an unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Lord, Mahajano Yena Kata Sapanta. Therefore, one should follow in the footsteps of the unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So, the behavior of a devotee establishes the true principles, religious principles, by one's behavior. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he presents in Sri Bhakti Loka some of the... I also have to apologize. I'm going to digress just for a second. I was relating to what Kardamba Kanana Maharaj was speaking about in class this morning about the body. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to sit here for 2 hours, honestly speaking. My back may not just sustain it. And the chair is worse. Everybody says, well, sit in the chair. It's worse. Take my word for it. So I'll try to last to the allotted time, but if I don't, forgive me, but I'll try my best. Because I looked at the clock and said, oh my God, I still have to sit here another hour. I'm not sure if I'm already... I got some things going on in my back. I won't tell you about all the things that Maharaj spoke about this morning, but I'm there too. Patience. Oh, okay, I'm going to start with reading it. I guess that was my introduction to patience, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur will illuminate or elaborate on different examples of patience in relationship to this topic is the urge to speak. He goes on to all of them to speak about the urge to speak, mind, anger, belly, tongue, genitals, but I'm going to try to stick on this controlling the urge to speak, because when we really go through it in a very deliberate and exhaustive way, taking Bhaktivinoda Thakur's examples and his principles, we'll see that there's really no need to talk about others as much as we sometimes tend to do. He's really kind of set the guidelines, and it may require in the beginning some restraint, but at least if we know what the proper behavior is, we may be able to minimize conflict, quarrel. And one of the things I've also discovered by introducing these topics is it creates a kind of atmosphere which is really conducive for Vaishnava exchanges, because a lot of times devotees are afraid to reveal their mind in confidence, because when they do, they're afraid where it's going to come out next. But when you learn how to control the urge to speak about others, it's amazing what kind of atmosphere is created when people feel that, hey, maybe if I say this, because Rupa Goswami says the dati pratagrinati guyamakyati pishite bunte bhochayate chaiva, the principles of loving exchanges to reveal one mind and confidence, inquire confidentially. But imagine the feeling of if you're in a society where nobody knows how to control the urge to speak, and you tell somebody something confidentially, and the next day it's on Facebook. You know, it's like, I said we're going to put it in a modern context. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't dealing with Facebook. He was dealing with Gramya. He was dealing with Gramya Katha. But it really, what does it do? It forces people into, like, I don't know who I can reveal my mind to. It's tough. Sometimes I go around, you know, I ask people, who do you reveal your mind to? Well, don't you have anybody to reveal your mind? And it's one of the principles of loving exchanges. It's what enhances devotional life, is to reveal one's mind in confidence. Confidence means I can say something confidentially, and I can have faith that it's going to stay right there, because I revealed it in confidence to this person. And generally, of course, we should always try to associate with devotees who are more advanced than ourselves, so that when we reveal our mind in confidence, we may get the help and strength from outside ourselves that we need to, you know, to deal with our anarthas. And it really helps to be able to speak confidentially with one another. And I found that Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood this principle, and that's why he actually gave some very good guidelines about when to speak about others and when not to speak about others. So, dhaya, patience. For the practitioner of devotional service, dhaya, patience, is extremely necessary. Those who possess the quality of dharya are called dhira, sober. Due to lack of this quality, men become restless. Those who are impatient cannot do any work. Yeah, this is what I was explaining before. Doesn't mean that those who are impatient can't sit in rush hour traffic every day on the way to work. Sometimes people, they may be very impatient, but they got to go to work. And they may sit, you know, for an hour, moving along, you know. So when he says that those who are impatient cannot do any work, it doesn't mean those who are impatient don't go to work. It means they can't do any internal work. He says, by the quality of dharya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. In the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of dhaya are explained. Vacho vegam, manasakrodha vegam, jiva vegam, udarapasta vegam, Etan ve ganyo vishahita dhira sarvam abhimam prativim sasishyat. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Of course, someone may say, okay, this is not about me anyways. Who am I to think about making disciples all over the world? I don't have to worry about this point of controlling these urges because I'm not thinking about accepting disciples. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is specifically stating that for those who are sadhakas, they need to do work. And those who are impatient, they can't do work. And by the quality of dharya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. This is an interesting story I like to tell in this connection. It'll take a few minutes, a little while. It's a nice story. But it really brings to light what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here. That a practitioner, a sadhaka, first learns to control himself and then he controls the whole world. And it's a story I read once about Raghunath Das Goswami. And the story describes Raghunath Das as a child. He was the son of a wealthy landholder, Govardhan Majumdar, who was a brother of Hiranya Majumdar. And at that time, they were very, very wealthy landowners. Their responsibility was to extract money from those, tax money, and to give, I think it was half. They gave half to the government and kept half themselves. And they were extremely wealthy. In fact, they were renowned in the whole area, that whole province, for being very, very wealthy and very charitably disposed. And Raghunath Das, as the son of Govardhan, he was the only child. So you can imagine being the only child of an extremely wealthy parent. As we know, Raghunath Das, he was in his childhood, he was definitely pampered by his father. All kinds of elaborate arrangements were made for his comfort, and the description which is given in this biography that I read about Raghunath Das was quite detailed about some of the things that Govardhan Majumdar used to do for Raghunath Das as a child. It's described how he used to lay lotus petals out on the walk, so that wherever Raghunath Das would walk, his feet would never have to touch the ground. And he would have palanquin waiting for him whenever he would exit the palace to carry him wherever he would have to go. And it's even described that there were three exits and entrances to the palace, and at each exit he would have a palanquin waiting for Raghunath to come out, because he never knew which one he would come out. And then as soon as he came out, he would be put in the palanquin and would be carried. And it was described also that Govardhan was protecting Raghunath from seeing ugly sights, you know, just like in the story of Buddha. You know, he was protected from seeing ugly things, and his father would always protect him. So not this is how he was brought up as a child. And Govardhan's family, I think they had two priests. One was Balaram Acharya, the other was Yarunandan Acharya. They were both priests of the deity. I think they were worshipping Radha Govinda deities, and they were the priests of the temple. And Balaram Acharya, he was a disciple, I guess. Was he a disciple of Haridas Thakur? Was he a disciple of Haridas Thakur? I don't know if Haridas Thakur had him as a disciple. Anyways, Balaram Acharya used to invite Haridas Thakur to his home. That's explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the whole conversation between Gopal Chakravarti and Haridas Thakur that took place in the home of Balaram Acharya. when Haridas was invited to that place. So Balaramacharya, at one time, he invited Haridas Thakur to come and to stay with him. And he provided Haridas Thakur with his own little cottage where he could stay, and he was chanting his prescribed number of rounds, which he was chanting at that time. And it became known throughout the area that Balaramacharya had Haridas Thakur at his home, and everyone heard about it, and especially Govardhan Majumdar, he heard about Haridas Thakur, and he was thinking that a great saintly person, because Govardhan had great respect for saintly persons, and he would oftentimes give charity, huge quantities of charity to saintly persons. So when he heard that Haridas Thakur was in Balaramacharya's home, he was thinking, I should send my son Raghunath to get a blessing from Haridas Thakur. You know, because he was thinking that certainly if he's blessed from such an exalted Vaishnava, his life will become very auspicious. So in preparation to send Raghunath Das to Haridas Thakur, he gathered up all kinds of opulent silks and elaborate gifts, and a whole cartload he filled up to bring, and he sent his guards along with Raghunath Das, and he sent his servants that were assigned to Raghunath Das, and all together the guards and the servants with the cartload of offerings for Haridas were brought to where Haridas Thakur was staying. And Balaramacharya brought Raghunath Das. And Balaramacharya knew that Govardhan Majumdar wanted his son to get a benediction from Haridas, but he also knew that it's probably not going to get the kind of benediction that Govardhan Majumdar is going to be ecstatic about when he hears about it. So he came with Raghunath Das, and he brought the cartload, and he said, Govardhan has asked me to bring his son Raghunath Das to you, and he's brought all of these gifts to you. And Haridas Thakur just kind of, you know, he was not at all attracted whatsoever by the cartload of gifts. He paid no attention. He said, what is it that he wants? He says, well, he's asking if you'll give Raghunath Das a benediction. And then Haridas Thakur immediately said something with his benediction, and Balaramacharya, suspecting that it's not going to be something that should be heard by Govardhan, he made a loud sound so that nobody else could hear it. And then what happened was that Haridas Thakur said, I bless you to renounce the whole world. And in Raghunath Das's heart, he's dancing. It's ecstatic. It's like such a blessing. You know, because he had no inclination for all of these things that his father was doing for him. It just wasn't there. It was not attracted to him. So he was so ecstatic. They brought back Raghunath Das, the guards, the servants, Balaramacharya. They went back to Govardhan Majumdar, and Govardhan said, so you brought Raghunath Das to Haridas Thakur? And he said, yes, we brought that. And he asked all the servants, he said, what benediction did he give him? Well, we didn't hear it. We couldn't hear what was said. You know. So then he went to Balaramacharya, he said, did Haridas Thakur give a benediction to my son? He said, oh yes, he gave a benediction. And then he said, well, tell me, what benediction did he give him? And he said, he gave the benediction to your son that he will control the whole world. And when Govardhan heard this, he said, wonderful! I control all these villages. I control this whole... my son will control the whole world. And then it's explained that one may think, why did Balaram Acharya say this? But the hidden meaning behind Balaram Acharya's statement is that because Raghunath Das will renounce the whole world and will have no attraction to anything in this world, nothing in this world will be able to control him. Therefore, he will control the whole world. Because if he has complete control of his mind and his senses, who will be able to manipulate? Haridas Thakur wasn't manipulated by that cartload of gifts. He was thinking, maybe Govardhan was thinking, if I give this cartload of gifts, certainly he'll give a wonderful benediction to my son. Haridas. He wasn't controlled. When a person controls his senses, when he controls his mind, first he controls himself, and then he can control the whole world, because nothing in the world will be able to control him. He will not be manipulated by the material energy. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the same implication here by saying that the sadhaka, the practitioner of bhakti, he first learns to control himself, and then when he learns to control himself, then he can control the world, which means he can accept disciples, which means that he won't be allured by attractive offerings from the disciples. He won't be lured by this material world, and he'll be able to be uncompromising in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. And because he's uncompromising in his presentation of Krishna consciousness, people will naturally come forward and say, "Wow, I'd like to become like that too." That's the benefit of actually having control of one's mind and senses, is that because most people can't control their minds and senses and they're suffering, they'll think, when they see somebody who's actually developed the capacity to control their mind and senses, they'll be thinking, well, maybe I should come and, what's the secret? What's the secret? Can you share it? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is essentially saying the same thing here, that he has to be patient, but vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam, a sober person, he first says, those who are impatient cannot do any work by the quality of daya, a practitioner controls first himself, and then the whole world. So then he quotes, sober person who tolerate the urge to speak. Then he begins to speak about the urge to speak. He says there are six types of urges, namely the urges of the speech, mind, anger, belly, tongue, and genitals. With a desire to speak more, a person becomes talkative. I'm not sure about that translation. I don't know. Desire to speak more. Adi, what do you think? Desire to speak more, a person, of course, if the person becomes talkative if he speaks more. I'm not sure. Anyways, with a desire to speak more, a person becomes talkative. If speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. An interesting point. To speak uselessly is the business of a fool, but out of a desire to unnecessarily engage in speech, the materialists always waste time and face so many distresses. Pious people observe maunavrata, or silence, in order to get rid of this disturbance. That is why the rishis have made provisions for observing various vows, like maunavrata. The practitioners of devotional service should not speak unnecessarily. If you do have to speak unnecessarily, better to keep quiet. It's profound. But to speak about the subjects favorable to devotional service is not unnecessary. Therefore, devotees should speak only on topics about Lord Hari, or those favorable to such topics. all other topics will be counted in the category of the urge to speak. One who is able to control the urge to speak is a sober person. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining right here that an important, relevant point, which will be elaborated on, interestingly, in another section. It's not in this section. There's another section where Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborates on Pajalpa, Atyaharas, Prayasascha, Pajalpa, Niyamagraha. In his essay on Pajalpa, he gives a description of different types of Pajalpas. One of them is fault-finding. And he gives a very elaborate detail about when one should speak about others and when one should not speak about others. And who should speak about others and who should not speak about others. And this all actually delineated there. But he says here, but I guess an important thing to understand though is, why does he have to address that point? Because the natural inclination of every soul is to speak about somebody else. It's natural. Unfortunately, if we forget who we're supposed to speak about when speaking about somebody else, then we have to start thinking about other persons and start talking about them. But the natural inclination is to speak about, you know, the little blue cowherd boy, like many of the residents of Braj find themselves oftentimes speaking about profusely. Coming together in different groups and talking about his activities for the day and talking about the things that he was doing on his way out to the pasturing grounds and discussing different characteristics that are very attracted to them and discussing various things that he did while he was in the pasturing grounds when his friends come back and they tell Mother Jasoda about all the things they saw Krishna do that day. And it's just a very natural thing to talk about somebody else, and because that's what we're naturally meant to do. But unfortunately, being conditioned by material nature, that urge to speak about somebody else, if it's not controlled, may manifest in a different way. And that is, we begin to speak about others. And he says here that if speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. And what does he mean? Well, I guess we could easily extrapolate that what he means is that when we talk about others unnecessarily, it creates enmity. It creates a lot of unnecessary talk. And especially when there's a lot of unnecessary talk about others, sometimes, which is not even factual, it's second hand, third hand, fourth hand, because the urge to speak hasn't been regulated sufficiently. And a lot of times it's not even connected to reality. But everybody's already talking about it as it's a fait accompli. Because we're always eager to hear about, you know, the juicy topics. But to hear the glorification of another Vaishnava, sometimes that may not be so attractive as the juicy topics. Maybe I'm getting a little bit too graphic. But in fact, even there's an example in Chaitanya Bhagavat that when Lord Chaitanya was in Kulia. First, I guess he met Gopal Chakravarti. Well, no, Gopal Chapala came to him. And he was, of course, he was looking for relief from his suffering because of his offenses to Srivas Thakur. But that's another story. I think it was somebody else at that place that came to Lord Chaitanya. And he explained that previously, I did not recognize the glory of Vaishnavas. And previously, I said things about Vaishnavas that now, I didn't know it. Unknowingly, I said things about Vaishnavas, but because I didn't really understand their full glory, how do I counteract reaction from saying things unknowingly about Vaishnavas? And Lord Chaitanya told him, he said, if a person drinks poison, then he can counteract the effects of poison by drinking the nectar of immortality. He said, similarly, with the same tongue that you used to speak unknowingly about Vaishnavas, with the same tongue, you use it to glorify Vaishnavas. And if you use it to glorify Vaishnavas, then this will counteract the effects of unknowingly committing some offense towards Vaishnavas. That was Lord Chaitanya's instructions. Of course, that was his instruction for unknowingly. Knowingly, there's a little, and that's what the example of Gopala Chapala. Knowingly, he knowingly committed offense. And Lord Chaitanya told Gopala Chapala, when Gopala Chapala was looking for mercy, he said, you can suffer for 10 million births. He wasn't as lenient with Gopala Chapala as he was with the... And he told him, you have to go back to Shivas Thakur and get his forgiveness. But unknowingly, this was the recommendation given by Lord Chaitanya. So, now, of course, after hearing this, I guess it may help us to know the difference between knowingly and unknowingly. But when you hear more of what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, and we go continue further on, you'll even have a clearer picture of the distinctions between knowingly and unknowingly. So we should, if we're not careful, and we knowingly speak about others, even though it's not really the right circumstance, it's really not the right motive, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also talks about the motive. He says, before one speaks about others, he better look within his heart, his own heart, to make sure there's no hatred, envy, or pride coming into play. He says, because if he speaks about others and hatred, envy, or pride comes into play by saying this, then he says, he becomes an offender of Bhakti Devi and his mind will never be peaceful. That's also, that I'm getting there, that's in the other section. So, therefore, he's saying that by speaking unnecessarily about others, it creates enmity. Because when things go around, and then it comes around second hand, third hand, and then when people, why, he said that? I didn't, where did you hear that? That's not true. Of course, somebody may deny it. And then, of course, the whole investigation, ISKCON resolve, time for ISKCON resolve. But still, if we're going to speak about others, we better know that we're telling it to the right person, and we better know what we're saying is factual, and we better know that I'm not saying this because I'm trying to spread something about somebody to make me look better and to make him look worse. And the more people who agree with all the things that I said about him because how he looks worse, then my objectives will be achieved. And then maybe people will recognize me, that I'm the Savior. I'm the Savior. I'm the one that revealed what I thought was fact. Of course, revealed what I thought was fact, which may have not been fact. So these things, I guess, is what's being addressed when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. So in Pajalpa, I've covered a lot so far. Should I leave questions? Time for questions? Before, I mean, there's a lot more. This is just the start. But But I haven't even gotten to the evidence, because this should be pramana. And I've been quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but I'm actually intending to read exactly what he said, the pramana. He's given some pramana. Of course, his words are also pramana, because this guru is sadhu and shastra. And he has given some specific, maybe, I don't know if I'm going to make it to 1 o'clock. That's the problem, for the reasons I gave. I'm going to stop here and see if there's any questions so far, and anything I've talked on so far. If not, then I'll try to continue a little longer. Yeah.
Maybe you will talk later about how to control it.
How to what?
How to control that these are this.
Uh-huh.
Maybe this topic will also come.
It will come. It will come to light, how to control. But what will come to light is that we can't just wait for it to happen. Patience doesn't mean that I'm just going to wait for it to happen. Patience means I'm going to make the effort, and I'll be patient when the result comes by Krishna's mercy. That's a sadhaka. Right? A sadhaka is not saying, I'm not going to make the effort and just wait for it to happen when Krishna's merciful to me to someday, but meanwhile, I'm going to... let everything out. Let it go. Let the tongue go uncontrollably, and let the senses go uncontrollably. And as we know, that's not a sadhaka. There has to be some restraint. Vishayavinivartante naraharasinehi. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the embodied soul may restrict themselves from sense enjoyment, even though the taste still remains. But ceasing such engagements when he experiences Krishna's mercy and gets the higher taste, he becomes fixed in consciousness. So he restricts himself. There's still a necessity for restricting. How to restrict the tendency to urge, for the urge to speak? I'd say the best way at this point to answer that would be by becoming aware of what the tendency is. The more you become aware of what the tendency is, the more you can put a buffer in between your mind and your tongue. Because actually, intelligence means... intelligence has to come into play at some point. If we just let our mind go and our tongue go without restraint, then the consequences will be there. But intelligence means to discriminate between what is right and wrong. And a strengthened intelligence means that I should understand this is wrong. I have the evidence. The pramana is there. I have examples. I see that people who do it, they don't, they're peaceful. and with the strength of the intelligence, then one may begin, there's an expression in English, look before you leap. That with one's intelligence, one can actually say, okay, now let me, before I just spontaneously speak in this way, why don't I take into consideration if it's really necessary to say this? In fact, there's an interesting verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Comment in Sukadeva Goswami, Pariksit Maharaj. It's the Paramahansas who accepted Krishna within the core of their heart. It is their nature to speak spontaneously, always about topics of Krishna. Just as a materialist spontaneously speaks about women and sex. Right? It's 10th canto, Bhagavatam, pramana, shastra. And Prabhupada speaks about it also in one lecture in Vrindavan, in a different sense, but Prabhupada said in one lecture in Vrindavan, I remember he said a person doesn't have to be trained for sex life. He says, it's spontaneous, the desire is there. And in the same way that if a person's mind is always absorbed in materialistic things, he doesn't have to be trained to speak about them. What's always in the heart will spontaneously come out. Right? I oftentimes give the example, before I came to Krishna consciousness, I used to build houses. I was a construction worker, and I used to work with some of these kind of people. That that, you know, as soon as the object of the senses would go by, whew, did you see that? You know, I still remember those. Of course, I was one of them. It was spontaneous, right? No practice required. They didn't have to go home at night and study and to prepare how to spontaneously speak about these subjects, because it's in the heart. Did you see that? What I would do with... Oh, yeah, yeah. So, Shukadeva Goswami, he's saying, paramakamsas have accepted Krishna within the core of their heart, because Krishna's in their heart. They're spontaneously speaking about Krishna, because Krishna's in their heart. In the same way as materialists spontaneously speak about their topics, because that's what's in their heart. So if we know that I'm going to spontaneously speak about these things, and I've heard so much about the dangers of spontaneously speaking about these things, then maybe I should use my intelligence a little bit before I speak about them. I mean, it's just, it's logical. That's practice. That's what sadhaka does. He practices. He practices controlling the urge to speak. He may slip. He may deviate sometimes. But Krishna says, if he, having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, knowing that all sense gratification leads to suffering, and still not being able to give it up, he says, my devotees, you should continue to go on hearing about me with faith and be happy. Because my devotee, he knows that even though he knows sense gratification leads to suffering, he can't give it up. He sincerely repents. So if he sees he slips, he goes on hearing about Krishna and he sincerely repents. You know, maybe I should have been a little bit more careful when I said that. Maybe I should have. I didn't think first. And maybe I should apologize, because maybe it doesn't apply. At that time, I just did it unknowingly. I just came out spontaneously. But maybe now that I thought about it, maybe I should apologize. Maybe it wasn't necessary to say. That's one way to answer your question. It's knowing. I mean, don't stay in ignorance about, you know, what are the principles. Don't stay in ignorance. It's an anartha. Stay in ignorance. We should know what the anarthas are. And kutinata, fault fighting, duplicity, it's anatta. What are the symptoms of it? Well, these are we've been talking about. This is a symptom of it. Another question? Yes? Yes.
So, do you have any
recommendations? Mercy. We need mercy. If you see that your mind is going to places that you know it's pretty dangerous, then you know you need help. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, in the morning we should beat our mind with a stick, and at night we should beat it with a shoe. So I'm not recommending that. But he's given some very nice instructions about these things, also from Amitavani. It's a very beautiful, very beautiful. Can I share it with you? It's not specifically on the topic, but it's here we go. I'll read it. Since I have it right in front of me, and I think it's a good answer to your question. Amitavani. Can I just excuse me? Sorry. I just need to decompress for a second. Vitavani.
Would you like to stand?
We can make it. No. I'll be okay. I'll make it 10 more minutes, I think. I think I'll be okay. I won't be crippled. Okay. It's not that long. We should display anger towards those who are envious of devotees. This is a particular limb of devotional service. A lack of anger against blasphemers is unjustified. But we need to understand who is actually envious of devotees. Those who do not serve the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul, and most blissful friend of all living entities. Am I speaking too fast for the translator? Sorry. Okay, I'll try to go slow. A lack of anger against blasphemers is unjustified. But we need to understand who is actually envious of devotees. Those who do not serve the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul, and most blissful friend of all living entities, do not benefit themselves, but instead invite trouble by their envy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Such people are branded as envious, and we should not show them mercy. These people become intoxicated by worshipping materialists. We should both ignore them and display our anger toward them. But before that, we have to see whether we ourselves are envious of devotees, whether we ourselves are actually serving Krishna. Or are we serving something else on the pretext of serving Krishna? How much are we attached to Krishna? Are we trying to enjoy the objects meant for Krishna's enjoyment? I think my enjoyment-prone material body is fiercely envious of Krishna and his devotees. Because instead of thinking constantly of Krishna's lotus feet and happiness, I am busy worrying about my own happiness, blaspheming others, and looking for faults. I do not look at myself at all. I am such an offender at the feet of devotees that I should first learn to display anger toward myself. I am so envious of devotees that I should beat myself with shoes simply to purify myself. So then I can set an example for others and sincerely engage in the service of Hari, Guru, and the Vaishnavas. I must remember that everyone is worshipping Hari but me. I am unable to do so. I should also remember that I may die at any moment. So first we should show anger toward our own sinful propensities, such as our desire for profit, adoration, and distinction, and our propensity to cheat others. We must correct ourselves first. Otherwise, we cannot correct others. Then we have to correct those who are related to us, who are envious of the spiritual master and Krishna, and who are pulling us toward material enjoyment by tempting us. This is the secret of success. I thought of that. It's not a full answer to your question, but it's helping us to become a little bit contemplative, introspective, because such introspection is really required to destroy that tendency of the mind, because it's going to happen until we're completely freed from envy. And as we know, Prabhupada said also that fortunately, the consequences of such thoughts will not manifest until they come to the thinking, feeling, and willing stage. And the thinking stage is we suffer because we can't control our thoughts. But the consequences are our own suffering, but there's no consequences and offense committed until it comes to the comes out. So therefore we should try to be introspective enough to look within ourselves and to see, should I become angry at myself first? Because my mind is always thinking in this way, and if it's always thinking in this way, then maybe the problem is there and not everywhere else where I'm perceiving it to be. And it's a good start. And that's a sadhaka. And I'm sure you're a sadhaka because you've been around for a long time, and you wouldn't have been around for a long time without learning these principles. But these are thoughts to give us more strength to do that which we know is the right thing to do. And fortunate for you that you asked, obviously, because you know what the right thing to do is. Okay, can I stop here? And then, I don't know, I guess I'm supposed to continue at some point. Huh? No, tomorrow's kirtan, I think. I can continue with the pramana about the circumstances under which we should speak about others and not speak about others. Thank you. Hare Krishna, glories to Prabhupada.